Welcome, welcome, everybody. My name is Nathan Choquette, one half of your hosts for the Normal Bros and Consoles podcast, coming to you on January 14th for our weekly episode of the mini-series Solo Gaming Updates. I believe we're on episode 35 now? Man. I said 35 and started thinking immediately, what's it going to be like when I'm in my 30s? And I'm just like, ooh. I don't know. I'm sure things will start falling apart at one point or another, but let's not worry about that. We're here to talk about some video games like we always do. Got some cool things that I've been going through on my list. I've been trying to make some interesting goals for myself. As you guys may know from kind of episodes in the past, I tend to have kind of gaming goals that I do for myself each year, at least for the past couple years for sure. Before then, I kind of maybe had soft goals, wasn't really like keeping to them too much, but when I've kind of been keeping to like specific things and more so kind of like writing things down as I'm going throughout the year, it kind of really keeps me on track in terms of like, oh, you know, I have this question in my head and I want to know this about myself when it comes to playing video games. And if I kind of keep track of it throughout the year, then I kind of have the constant reminder of like, oh, you know what, this is something that I want to find out. And since we're already, you know, X month through the year, let's just keep on going with it. So I've been doing that for the last couple years and it's been pretty fun. I think one of the years I did a test to see kind of how much I play video games throughout the year, was surprised that the number was actually in hours, the number was actually much lower than I expected. Jumping back in the Wayback Machine, I think as a quick reminder for myself, it was something in like the amount of time that I am awake for, I believe, during the year. If we say that 8 hours, I think, is, you know, sleeping each day kind of thing, I think the number of, or like the percentage of time that I'm actually playing video games while I'm awake was only like around 10 or 11%. It was pretty low, surprisingly, and I was kind of surprised to find that out. And then I was also like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not so bad at kind of managing my time and spreading it out through other things. But that was, I think, one of them. I think actually, yeah. And then this last year, that was the second year I think I did it. What I did was I wanted to make a list of kind of things that I bought throughout the year, and then kind of try to compare that with we'll say like a scaled score of kind of how many things I could complete throughout the year. My mindset for all that was like, okay, if I go and buy like a, I don't know, a 100-hour RPG kind of thing, and then I go and beat a, I don't know, a Rotalaika games joint in the span of like under an hour, twice on two different platforms kind of thing. How does that kind of compare to one another in terms of like buying a big thing and then finishing a real small one? So I figured a scaled score would kind of be the best way to go about that. This is getting real into the weeds on this thing, but stay with me here. So basically for that scaled score, what I did was if the amount of time, or I made it so the amount of time was kind of correlated with the score in terms of like, yeah, I think anywhere from 1 to 10, I believe is what it was. Let me go back real quick. I think I've got it over here. Here we are. So, went and kind of throughout the year, made a list of the things that I bought throughout the year. And then, in order to balance the kind of scaled score as well, I kind of put point values for the amount of time I spent in a game to go ahead and finish through it. So these are kind of the things here, just to give you a little bit of insight into this stuff. So to get 1 point, right, in that scaled score, I was able to finish the game in 3 hours or less. I think 2 points is 4 to 8 hours, 3 points is 9 to 14, and then from there, I think I started to go up in increments of about, like, 15. So for 4 points, I had to, it had to take 15 or more hours to finish that game. For 5 points, 30 plus, and then kind of going up from there. And then eventually made some jumps when it came to, you know, really huge games, such as like anything that was 75 hours or over or 100 hours or over. Netted quite a lot more points than usual, just because those ones are really like huge time sinks and take away from kind of the whole amount of like time that I can put towards video games in general. There was also extra points, or like 1 extra point per game if I managed to get 100% of the trophies, or achievements in it. and DLC completion counted as their own kind of individual games, depending on if their size was pretty substantial as well. So a few things in there was stuff like the Spider-Man or Marvel Spider-Man PS4 game DLC. Each one of those packs, I think, was a few hours long, so I was able to get some points from those ones in terms of the scaled score, as well as things like Neo and stuff, which had pretty large DLCs as well. So in the end, everything kind of netted out pretty well. So let me see. Now, obviously not made of money. So not all of these things were purchased, you know, for full price, cause that would be pretty crazy. But the final count on the scaled score was 151, and that was a total of 54 games completed, or 54 games / DLCs completed, and then kind of using the scaled score system like I mentioned there. And then going through the number of things that I purchased, it was lower than 151, which was nice. So I wanted to make sure that those things balanced out, make sure I'm kind of spending my time wisely and whatnot, and it seemed like I was doing an okay job towards the end. I think a few times in the year, the points on the scaled side ended up kind of getting close to the purchase side, as well as kind of like purchase side going a little bit higher. And so then I had to really, you know, light a fire and try to finish things up and keep my goal of reducing the backlog going forward and whatnot. But it wound up being okay. So that was kind of nice to see. This year, I didn't really have a full idea of kind of what I wanted to do yet. So being the you know, self-proclaimed trophy titan on the Bros and Consoles podcast, what I've decided to do is basically kind of try to push myself in terms of kind of trophy gettage. That's a weird word. Trophy earning. There we go. And so what I did is, I believe at the start of the year, I was at 218 platinum trophies. Is that right? 218? I think so. And so basically I was looking at it and I was like, okay, you know, maybe it's time to kind of light a trophy fire under my butt. So what I did is decided to try and shoot for 250 platinum trophies. So that's a total of 32 that I need to get throughout the year. I think in my head, it's not too difficult to kind of get to, as long as I'm kind of spending time wisely and focusing on things, which is what I'm kind of trying to do more of in this year as well. I really want to focus and kind of knock out games that have been in my backlog for a long time. And what better way to do that than kind of focusing down on some of the trophies in these things. So far I have gotten one platinum trophy for Super Hot Mind Control Delete. That one I actually did a few days ago, and man, it took a little bit of time. I think on the PS5 now, you can see how long you've played different PS4 and PS5 games for. And from what I understand, reading things on the interwebs, it sounds like the PS4 game time is pretty accurate. PS5 game time is a little bit iffy sometimes. And looking at the Super Hot game, or the kind of sequel to Super Hot, it shows that I am right around 11 hours on there, which I think sounds about right, because that one took a little bit of time, but it's a fun game for people who have played Super Hot or have heard about that game and stuff in the past. This one is essentially, like I said, the sequel to it, and, you know, surprisingly good in terms of kind of like there's a mysterious story going on in the background, and it does a good job of kind of picking up where the first one left off. I'm kind of surprised that this game didn't get like a lot of, you know, kind of buzz around it when it first released. It seemed like it was just kind of almost out of nowhere that this game came up. And then the nice surprise was that when it was going to be coming out, there was a post that mentioned that if you owned Super Hot or Super Hot VR, for people who are aware, those two are roughly the same game in terms of gameplay and everything, and in terms of kind of where the, I guess, like the lore of the games go. But the story-wise, I think, in both of them are slightly different. But yeah, so basically, if you owned either of those games before Super Hot Mind Control Delete released last year, I believe, then you got this sequel for free. And then other people, I think, could pay, I think it's like 20 or 25 bucks or something, and get that game as well if they wanted to. But real fun game. If you have not played it or the other Super Hot games, definitely give it a try, because it's a really cool concept where basically you are just kind of fighting random enemies, either with kind of your fists or items you can pick up off the ground and tables and things that are nearby. And it's kind of you just fighting these, you know, red humanoid characters. And the cool part of it is that when you move your character, time also moves, or it moves kind of at a normal speed. Otherwise, time is moving at almost a near like standstill. And the idea is that you're kind of trying to make your way throughout these levels in order to survive till the end, while taking out all of the bad guys as well. And kind of pretty cool and mysterious story going on in the background. You kind of get a little bit of it in the like original games, and kind of get more deep into it for this one, it feels like, because like one, there's secrets in each level that you can find terminals for, and that kind of gives you a little bit more of background of what's going on. But then two, as you kind of make your way through, you kind of start to get the feeling of like, oh, you know, there's kind of some weird like sinister things going on in the background. And by the end of it, I was like, okay, I think I have a better understanding of the story, which is kind of what I was hoping for, and I dug it quite a lot. So definitely give that one a try if you're interested at all. That one took up quite a bit of time during this past week, along with a good old game from, I think, when was it, 2015 or 2014 when it first released? Bloodborne. Bloodborne. Man, this game... Ooh, it's hard to kind of put into words exactly how I feel about this game because I enjoy it so much. But in terms of kind of the different games in the Soulsborne series, is kind of that moniker and whatnot, the game Bloodborne, I think, is probably, I'll say probably my favorite out of kind of the original ones from Software. I haven't played enough of Sekiro to really know if that one will overtake it, but I think based off of overall reception for Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, and kind of playing some of the beginning and whatnot, I could tell that it would definitely be my jam if I were to start playing it and whatnot, or start playing it further, because I played, I think, a few bosses in that game. But man, Bloodborne has a total of 17 bosses. And the interesting thing is I didn't realize how many of them were actually like optional kind of bosses. Before looking at the trophy list and whatnot, it seemed like things were kind of jumping around all over the place in terms of kind of like the location of trophies, which was a weird thing, I think, when the game was pretty like new and fresh. But now kind of looking at everything, there being all kinds of thing on the internet where you can just kind of look through and find like, not guides per se, but... you can find kind of lists of like people's recommended order of the bosses that you kind of take them on in this order, or that makes sense in kind of more of like a story aspect and natural progression and whatnot. Didn't realize that basically the trophies are organized in terms of like the, you know, mandatory bosses going first, and then the optional bosses following that afterwards. And it kind of does keep it in a relatively orderly pace that way, so that if you're only going through and playing the mandatory ones, it kind of shows you the exact path you need to go, looking at the trophy list. And then if you were to go and switch that and, you know, want to do the optional ones and the mandatory ones, you can kind of tell where you need to like bounce back and forth and whatnot as well there, based on your own progression throughout the game, and also just kind of like the lists that are available online, which I thought was pretty cool. I have made it, so there's 17 bosses total in the original game, 5 new ones in the DLC as well. I have made it through, let me see, I think the last boss that I faced was one called the Amygdala, and I think total... Let me count this real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So in the original game, so not counting the DLC because I haven't touched any of those bosses yet. In the original game, I am 10 out of 17 for the bosses so far. Now, in terms of mandatory ones, I could just go ahead and fight the last two mandatory bosses and then finish the game. But I'm enjoying fighting all these bosses so much that I want to like see each and every one of them through. Now, does that mean that I've found a bunch of weird places and have to figure out exactly how to progress through them and whatnot? Yes, it does. One of them, what is it, you went? I went and found, this is getting, I guess, a little bit towards, like, you know, super, super light spoiler kind of things in terms of, like, if you just want to jump into Bloodborne blind, you know, fall asleep for the next, like, we'll say, like, minute or so, starting now. So, basically, I had to go through the kind of a weird shortcut area going back to a place called Yosefka's Clinic near the beginning of the game in order to find this, it's like a summons letter. And the summons letter found out kind of links back to another area in the game that you went through to fight the Witches of Hemwick, which for people that are unaware of like things to do with Bloodborne, this is going to sound like a whole bunch of just garbled nonsense, but stick with me here. So basically, if you take that letter over to that area and kind of fight through some of the bad guys in the beginning, you eventually find this large, I'll say like gravestone kind of thing, almost large like monolith. And when you get to it, a cutscene plays, and then this chariot of like, you know, gross looking horses and stuff comes down. And they basically kind of whisk you away to this new place. And I think we're coming back right about now for that minute that I mentioned. But yeah, basically getting to this new place and kind of seeing the grandiose nature of the castle that I'm at. Pretty cool kind of scene. Also really cool scene is that basically the carriage that you take to get there, you end up kind of, you know, you're making your way to this castle and whatnot. And then once I arrive there, I assume it was by design and whatnot. There's little cool, like, Easter egg kind of, I don't know if you call it Easter egg kind of things, but little cool, like, creepy things that happen within the game that kind of catch you off guard if you're, like, paying attention to it. And basically the carriage slash, like, you know, horses and whatnot that took you to this castle, they're kind of just, like, frozen and, like, dead as soon as you, like, arrive at this place. And it seems to me like that's like a purposeful kind of thing. I don't know if it's meant to be taken that way, but it's a pretty cool, like, creepy moment where you like, okay, got this huge castle in front of you. If you want to go back, you turn around and the bridge is gone, so you can't even go back anymore. And the carriage and the horses are just like frozen over. And you're just like, well, I gotta go through this place. There's some pretty gross creatures. And that's kind of Bloodborne's thing, right? Is like these really grotesque, almost like H.P. Lovecraftian ghouls and, you know, entities and whatnot, along with just kind of like deranged beasts and things that you end up fighting. But overall, like going into this like castle area, for people who know the areas of the game, I think it's Castle Kanehurst, I believe. Going in there, started fighting some of the bad guys there, and immediately knew, like, all right, this is an area that I'm not ready for yet, or just that I'm not, like, prepared for currently. I started playing around with a little bit of the systems in the game where you can add certain tributes to your weapons, and ended up going to another place, because I figured, I was like, all right, I'm not ready for this one yet, I'm gonna go somewhere else, and tried out some different weapon, I guess not styles, but what would you call that? Weapon elements and whatnot. Learned that fire was way better against some of the enemies I was fighting, and figured that I think once I go back, I'll probably continue on with the fire, see if that makes it a little bit easier. But the optional bosses that I'm looking at there in terms of like Kanehurst, it sounds like from what I've read is kind of one of the harder bosses to fight. So I'm interested to see like how it's going to be going back there. So far, the bosses haven't been too bad. I think majority of the bosses have only taken a few tries to kind of get through, if at all. And I really enjoy kind of the progression through the game, which has been a really, you know, cool thing compared to some other Souls games. Like, compared to some other Souls games, it feels like progression in Bloodborne happens pretty naturally. Originally, I think when I started the game, you know, like 6-ish years ago or something, it felt like, you know, I wasn't getting souls at the fast enough rate that I needed them to level up and whatnot. And so at the time I was like, ooh, this is going to be rough. But other Souls games, or I should say like, you know, say Bloodborne was doing like, it seemed rough in the beginning. But like Dark Souls 1 and 2, I think at the time that I had played, it seemed like I was needing to kind of not needing to, maybe, because maybe I was just kind of newer to the franchise at that point, but it seemed like playing through those games that I needed to kind of, you know, run through the areas a few times and kind of collect more souls in order to upgrade my character enough. For Bloodborne, it hasn't really seemed that way, where I've kind of somewhat been able to just go through areas and then fight the boss and, you know, after one or two tries, finish up and then go and upgrade my character at that point. And I kind of enjoy that aspect of it, where, you know, I don't feel like I have to kind of like grind and whatnot, which is something that I think I've thought about in other Souls games. But it's been pretty surprisingly refreshing so far, just kind of going through at a regular-ish pace and then consulting kind of my list of bosses I need to check off and whatnot. And then the fun part of just kind of, you know, accidentally stumbling on some bosses and realizing like, whoa, I'm not supposed to fight this boss yet according to this list that I made. But, you know, going and fighting them, it hasn't been too bad so far. Now, for people who are maybe pretty hardcore into the Soulsborne games and whatnot, I do occasionally like summon help from kind of the NPCs and stuff that are around, and kind of use that time to, you know, either figure out the boss patterns and whatnot, or just to kind of, you know, I think sometimes when I do that, it ends up being enough that I can just breeze through a boss pretty easily, because, you know, they're not solely focused on me and I'm not solely focused on dodging and stuff. But I also do kind of enjoy like leaving my summon sign like in some of the other Souls games, and basically kind of helping out other people fight the bosses once I've kind of beat them once, so that I kind of get a better sense of like fighting the boss without like the help of an NPC kind of thing. And I guess that sounds weird because now I'm the one who's helping somebody else do it. But yeah, it's been fun though. I get to see kind of the boss's patterns more times, so that when I eventually go back for New Game Plus runs and whatnot, I'll kind of have a better idea and just hopefully be able to go through the boss pretty decently, I'll say. I think the one that's given me, I would say, the most trouble so far has probably been one called Rom the Vacuous Spider. Maybe it's just because spiders creep me out in general, but that one I think was a different one because he uses so much like magic attacks kind of thing that I wasn't really expecting. And then obviously there's the spider spawn that he kind of like creates around himself, and you gotta make your way through those things. And then the weird glitches there where sometimes your what's it called, people you summon and stuff, which I think I had summoned a character earlier on in that level kind of thing, just because I saw it was available and I wanted to see who this guy was and whatnot, and brought him with me through the level because, you know, he was doing fine, I was doing fine. And then we eventually got to the boss, and when we dropped down and everything to fight the boss, found out that he got stuck in like an invisible wall and he couldn't, you know, follow me into there or whatnot. So I was just like, okay, well, this is weird and different. But kind of going through there, finding out about the magic attacks, I think I died maybe once or twice. And then Babe basically was able to kind of do it, I think, with the help of a different summon character appeared later on. And so I was able to bring him with me, and he wasn't, you know, captured by this invisible wall. And then by then I had kind of learned the boss's patterns and stuff, and it was kind of a cakewalk from there. So not too bad, but it's been fun kind of learning these things, and I'm excited to get through the rest of these bosses. The only tough thing is that I feel like after a period of time, there's only so much of these games that I can play like straight. I think for the past few days I've been playing pretty much only Bloodborne with the occasional like change to something else. Like this morning I changed to a new game that came out called Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game complete edition, which is way too long if you ask me for a title, but basically kind of a return of this old game that is a kind of way different genre, like just a classic like side-scrolling beat-em-up kind of thing. And that game, pretty tough already, but it was kind of a nice change of pace compared to the, you know, constant tension of the Bloodborne / Soulsborne kind of games. But I find that I kind of am drawn to these types of games more often than anything else. And, you know, maybe I just need to kind of find better ways to like relax in between those things, because as I'm going through, if I'm there for more than like a few hours kind of thing, I start to get like almost like a little like mentally exhausted, where I'm just like, man, maybe I've been on like high tension alert for a while, or maybe just high alert is a better way to say it. Then, and because of that is, you know, I'm just feeling really tired and a little bit like slower reaction times and stuff. So maybe I just need to take a little bit of a break and play something else that doesn't require so much brain power. But it's been cool though. I like going through the side characters' stories and whatnot. I'm trying to, you know, clean up the trophies as I go as well. So I've been kind of looking up guides and things for like what I need to get at specific places, and it's been nice so far. I like the game quite a lot. Now, the big question is, you know, am I going to be able to finish it in the month of January? Who knows? Because, you know, January is kind of the goal that I'm setting for myself so far. I have been playing, not on purpose, I think, originally, but kind of it came back in a nice way where I was starting to play this as the guys from Kinda Funny were starting it up as well, or Greg Miller specifically, and it's been a lot of fun kind of going through and seeing how other people play Bloodborne as well, because I'm so used to just only knowing the way that I play these games and not really thinking about how other people may be playing them. And I think it's a good way to learn some like tips and things, but I want to try and stay a little bit ahead so that I can kind of push myself to, you know, finish these things up and, you know, do it in a timely fashion, because I think everyone's trying to do it for like the month of January, basically, which has been a fun little thing and a way to keep motivated, which is nice. Now, aside from that, and, you know, like I mentioned, Scott Pilgrim and then the occasional like Minecraft and things, I did also get to play a little bit of a demo, actually, for a game that's going to be coming out in the beginning of February. The demo itself was for the game Yeez 9, and that's YS, and then like the Roman numerals 9. I think it's, shoot, what is it? Monstrum Nox, I think, is the like, you know, subtitle? Is that the right thing? Maybe subtitle. But yeah, it's the extra part of the title there. And obviously, as you can tell, the Yeez series has been around for quite a while, since they're on, you know, the 9th installment and whatnot. And I'm not sure if that counts, even like the ones like Yeez Origins and side things like that. I think there's, what is it, Yeez Memories of Celcida that was on the Vita and they brought eventually over to the PS4. I don't know if those ones are included as well. But if they're not, that makes the list even larger, which is pretty crazy. But I did go through the demo of that game. And that was, I think, one that I alluded to that I was going to be checking out on the last episode and then forgot to totally like mention at the end anyways. But checked out the demo, was surprised that the demo was kind of as restrictive as it was. You basically can kind of choose between two different areas. One of them is like a underground like cavern kind of thing in somewhat of like a desert-y kind of environment, it seems like. And then the other one I didn't try out because I just wanted to kind of try one area to get a feel for the game. It's got fun gameplay in terms of kind of like you can switch between the three characters that you have in your party, and each one's got different moves and kind of strengths and whatnot. But overall, it was a decently fun time, I'll say. I've never really played much of the Yeez series before, so it was kind of a new experience for me. And then the demo, in terms of it being restrictive and whatnot, was surprised to find out that it's basically only 10 minutes of gameplay per like session that you start. So if you jump into the demo, you start a new game and whatnot, as you choose between the two different areas that you can option for, each of the different areas you play as different characters as well. And from there, the starting point, you basically are told like, okay, you got 10 minutes to kind of do whatever you want. And you can, you know, try and fight the boss for an extra challenge kind of stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was making my way through, fighting all the enemies, grabbing all the items that I could and stuff. And then the first run through, I didn't even make it to the boss. And I was like, oh, geez. I guess I'm moving kind of slow for like a 10-minute trial. Or maybe 10 minutes doesn't feel like it's enough time to really, you know, get to the boss and whatnot. Because in my head, I was like, okay, like maybe if you get to the boss and you finish it, that's the end of the demo anyways. Come to find out that, you know, reached my time limit, ended up starting it again in that same area, and then kind of ran through not fighting enemies this time and basically just kind of collecting items along the way. The items had basically all been equipable kind of things that you could put on your character to kind of boost their stats and whatnot. So I ran through grabbing the most that I could and then made it to the boss area, which was a pretty cool, like, it's probably more of like a mini boss than like a full on boss, but it was fun. It was, I was surprised to see how like enjoyable that boss battle was. It's basically this big monster creature that kind of breaks. It's like a large bat creature that kind of breaks up into smaller bats to, as a, like one of its attacks to kind of fly around the room and whatnot. But it was a pretty fun time kind of switching between the different characters, figuring out kind of strengths as to like who to use more during like certain phases of the boss and whatnot. And then kind of learning that, you know, the, it's probably something that's not new for people who are into the Yeez series, but learning how to kind of manage between like, you know, special attacks and just like regular attacks and whatnot, and kind of watching my meters and things was a different kind of experience than I'm used to. But it got me in the mood to play a little bit of Yeez 8, which is called Lacrimosa of Dana as well, or Dana maybe. And that one I tried out a little bit in the beginning, and I'm liking it so far. It's kind of more of what I was expecting from the Yeez games in terms of, you know, like, I don't have to rush through things and stuff, which is, you know, a downfall of any kind of, like, demo that's set up like that. But it was fun from the beginning that I was starting it, and then have, I think, made it through to kind of, I'd say, like, the first main area of the game. And I'm liking the combat so far. I think that's kind of the biggest change that I'm noticing. I assume as I, you know, find more characters throughout Yeez 8 that I'll probably get the ability to kind of switch between them a little bit more fluidly. But at the moment, I'm enjoying it so far. The one, I think, downfall of the game that I've seen is that on the plus side, you can switch the key, like what the buttons do and stuff, which is nice. I feel like button mapping is not something that's always super common in games in general, but this one, when you choose the different buttons you want to be different things, I think it started me off with some weird kind of like configuration that I'm not used to in games, where I think something like X or circle was the like attack button, and then I think square was for something else, and it was kind of a weird thing where I'm so used to hitting square for like attacks and whatnot, especially for like action adventure kind of games. And then ended up kind of switching the button mapping around so that it kind of matched more of the style that I was, you know, thinking about in my head. And I think even closer to the style that was set up in Yeez 9. So it seems like maybe things have kind of changed over time there as well. But going and remapping the buttons to something that I was more used to was a good thing. I liked that. But then seeing the tutorials pop up, the tutorials were still trying to tell me how to play the game with the original button mapping, which was kind of throwing me off a little bit. So like it'd tell me to press a certain button, and I'm like, I know that, you know, my attack button is now square rather than X, and so maybe I need to just kind of remember what I'm doing here. So I think that's my only gripe with like the early stuff so far, but it's been pretty cool. I've played a little bit of it. I think probably still like under an hour, which is, you know, very small amount of the game in terms of, you know, what I'm assuming is going to be the size of this title. And I'm liking it so far. So I'm going to hopefully go through Bloodborne. When I need a break, I'll jump into Yeez 8 and kind of play through that. And then maybe by the end of January, I'll have finished up Yeez 8 and Bloodborne, and then can get ready for Yeez 9 because it's coming in February. So who knows? We'll have to keep an eye out for that. See if I can keep on schedule and whatnot. Because another thing I've been trying to do is each day that I am playing stuff, I try to also earn a trophy each day. And it's been a little bit tricky so far. Luckily, I've been doing okay, and it's kind of keeping me motivated in terms of, you know, constantly pushing forward, especially in stuff like Bloodborne. If I can get a new trophy for each boss that I beat and stuff, then I can basically kind of make it so that I'm always making progress rather than kind of falling behind. And I've been keeping up so far. We're 14 days in, and I've gotten a trophy each day, I believe, in this year. But I don't know how long it's going to last. I wouldn't say it's like a, you know, like a personal goal at the moment. It's just kind of a thing that I'm trying to see how long I can keep this streak going for. So who knows? Let's kind of see how long I can keep it going. I don't think I'm going to extend the same thing to like achievements and stuff, because, you know, after kind of really switching over to the Sony side back in, what was it, 2013, I think I had kind of already like kind of fallen out with the achievement system and whatnot. Wasn't really kind of piquing my interest anymore, but the trophy stuff was really grabbing me. So I'm going to keep on going with the trophy side there. I'm just not sure if I were to make that an actual goal for myself, I feel like I'd probably end up, you know, foregoing the other systems that I have things on, and that would kind of be an unfortunate thing, because I do hope to finish up Zelda Breath of the Wild this year as well, because if we're eventually going to get the second or like the sequel to that game, I want to be able to play that with kind of the knowledge of finishing up the original game. So we'll kind of see where my time kind of splits off and where maybe I end up breaking this streak of trophies each day. But yeah, I think it'll be kind of a little fun experiment to see how long I can keep going and see if that continues to push me towards, you know, my goal of basically 32 total platinums this year. Because, man, if it was any more than that, it'd probably end up being like a platinum a week, and that sounds pretty rough. That sounds like I'd probably burn out, I'd say, maybe halfway through the year or something. But, yeah, I think it's a fun little thing. Just real quick, a few just like small announcements that I recently heard about. Pokemon Snap is coming to the Nintendo Switch, and this is a new Pokemon Snap, as they're calling it, I believe. And, man, it's like the beautiful graphics from Pokemon Sword and Shield has now been transferred over to Pokemon Snap, which maybe had a pretty, you know, core cult following around it kind of thing. I remember being a kid and playing Pokemon Snap, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I'm definitely not as, like, super hardcore about it as I think some people are in the world. But the idea of a new Pokemon Snap with the graphics of, you know, Sword and Shield and whatnot is, like, super awesome looking. And I'm digging if you want to go see it, there's a trailer out for it right now. I think it's 2 minutes or less of the trailer and whatnot. And this really bumping music throughout the thing. Like, peaceful kind of stuff, right? It's not, like, dubstep or stuff like that, but there's really nice music kind of throughout the trailer, really cool like scenes with different Pokemon and kind of getting that old school vibe of throwing out like apples and things to get good like pictures of these Pokemon in their natural environment. And it's looking like something I'm going to enjoy quite a bit. I think it's coming out in April, I believe, and I think you can already pre-order it at like different places that you want to order things. So I'm going to hopefully get my hands on that eventually. And then, you know, maybe April will end up being the time when I break the trophy streak and whatnot. Because Pokemon Snap coming to Nintendo Switch, I'll probably be all about it for at least a good few weeks, I'll say. If the game is decently, like, you know, sized and whatnot and not like crazy long, I could probably get through it in a few weeks. So we'll see as it comes to April and whatnot. But that's so far away, and let's just kind of take things on a week by week basis for now. So what we'll probably do is I'm gonna end the episode here so far, because we got a lot of stuff that we talked about already. And I think next week I will update you guys a bit more about overall, like, some of the releases that are going to be coming out. We've already had some news about some delays already this year, so I'll probably tack that into next week as well. See if anything else pops out as in terms of kind of like more delays, because we're already, what, like 2 weeks into the year so far, and we've had quite a few things that have been pushed either towards the end of or towards later in the year or towards even like 2022. So we'll see if we've got any more things to add on to that list for next time. But thank you guys and gals for tuning in again this week. I think what I'll probably be doing is, now that I'm kind of getting more into like more like busy work schedule kind of thing, I'll probably be going back to the like once a week kind of format. And then maybe every once in a while when I have the time, I'll throw in an extra special like Tuesday episode. But we'll say for now, probably Thursdays will be the official day that episodes will pop on a regular basis. And then, you know, like I said, random Tuesdays here and there, who knows? We'll see what happens. But yeah, thank you guys and gals for tuning in. If, as always, feel free to contact me at brosandconsoles@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at IndieRonan for updates on things related to the podcast or just kind of video games in general. And IndieRonan on PSN as well if you want to play some games. I know Scott Pilgrim has multiplayer kind of stuff, so if other people are interested, I think it's $15, like $14.99. If you want to pick that up and hit me up with a message, let me know that you're itching to play that game in multiplayer, and I'll say, yes, please help, because this game's a little bit tough for me. I'm not great at beat-em-ups, but it'd be a fun time. So until next week, I hope you all stay safe and healthy. Keep on washing hands, staying distance from each other. And, you know, 2021 will hopefully be a better year than last year was, but there's been a lot of stuff happening so far, and I hope just everyone is staying safe and healthy and everything. You know, always tell your family that you love and appreciate them, because sometimes things go unsaid and whatnot, and you never want to, you know, have things unsaid in these turbulent times, we'll say. Until next week, though, hope you guys have a good one, play some cool games, and talk to you next Thursday. Peace out, and cheers.